Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. My name is Lisa Chomet. I'm the head of partnerships at Charter Digital. And today we will be talking about digital strategy. More than 4 in 5 charities see digital as more of a priority as a result of the pandemic. And that's according to the 2022 Charity Digital Skills Report. Demand for digital services has increased, with 72% of charities actively working towards progressing with digital through tools, skills, infrastructure, and more. But what exactly does progress look like? The charity sector has grown significantly in confidence when it comes to basic digital skills. But the digital world changes rapidly and technology grows increasingly sophisticated. So how can charities keep pace without fear and with limited resources? So today we're going to explore how charities can embark on new digital projects with intention. And I'm very delighted to welcome our three guests today. We've got Becky Denny, Director and founder of the charity Spark; Alice Kershaw, the head of digital transformation at the Royal Society of Wildlife Trusts; and Mark Luckin, senior consultant at Adapta Consulting. Hello. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi there.
Very nice to have you today. And I think I will dive straight in. So obviously we've been talking about digital and what it means for charities as a whole. But perhaps if we take a step back, is how do you choose the right project to start with? And perhaps, Alice, you want to start with that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's always an interesting point of decision, isn't it? Do you go for the biggest one that you can find to make a massive impact, go for something small? I mean, it's always a big challenge of where do you actually start with digital transformation? And I think for me, it's probably finding something that enables you to fully embed what it means to be digital. I really like the definition that Tom Lusamore has around it being the culture, processes and ways of working, not just the technology that makes something digital. So finding an opportunity where you can, for example, use kind of agile methodologies or bring in some service design or take a kind of user-centered approach for the first time is probably where I'd look to really start, because then you kind of start to embed that kind of curiosity around it, a bit of the skills around it, and a bit of the learning about what it means to be digitally confident, not just what it means to have new technology. And that, for me, alongside the kind of probably slightly more obvious ones about, you know, something that definitely helps deliver your vision and mission, you know, not just chasing the shiny thing because it's shiny, but finding something that really does have some kind of impact for you as a charity, but definitely embedding a kind of digital methodology within it will give you more bang for your buck, especially because it is going to be a challenge, your first digital project.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right, Alice. And perhaps before we hear from Becky and Mark, Alice, can you give us a very quick background of where you've been involved in starting this project as part of the Wildlife Trust?
Yeah, so I actually work at, having just said, make sure you pick one, I work on a number of different projects across the Wildlife Trust Federation. So my job is to work on behalf of the Wildlife Trust. So I work for the kind of central charity, and we are an organisation of 47 independent charities that cover the UK. So effectively, there's a lot to go at. So identifying projects where, firstly, we had funding was quite important, because budget is really critical. So where do we have budgets coming in for digital kind of enhancement projects? Where is there a need? Where are people really picking up on pain points in particular? It might be a great opportunity, like the funding, or it might be something that everyone's just griping about. So we've got some projects running at the moment around bringing in what's called our new data facility, which is, you know, where UK-wide we need to bring our data together. And to support that, we've had to kind of do a bit of work around data culture, around our processes, around our standards, all that cool, exciting stuff people love around getting your data in order to get that. But working through that process has really helped people to understand what it is to be digital. How do we collaborate? How do we think about things in a digital way? How do we kind of make the most of the technology as well? So we've had some work going on there, along with some things around volunteer management platforms, how we get information out to our communities, how we work together more digitally, and also kind of slightly meta, how we co-create our digital strategy and roadmap together as a federation, which kind of underpins the whole lot of what we're trying to do. And that means that it's not me choosing what it is that we're collectively working together to find where the biggest impact is. Because I think I would have lost everyone in the Federation if I'd come in. I've only been here 2 years, almost exactly. If I'd come in and said, I know what we need, it wouldn't have gone anywhere. That's not how we work. We have to make sure that everything is kind of collaboratively developed. So things like data is a really good one because it's right there in our strategy. Plus it underpins all of the things we're trying to do. We're spatially located. So habitat, species, people, they're all in our local areas. So thinking about how that might work kind of at a local level, but also at scale, was something that cut across every other element of our strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Alice, for, yeah, it sounds like exciting, but also with a lot of moving parts in your world, Alice. And I guess, you know, Becky, there's probably a couple of points that would also you'd like to expand on based on Alice's answer.
I mean, Alice is absolutely right. It's, you know, that there are always so many things that can be picked up and started. And it's all about trying to find the ones that are going to be most pressing for now. But we often work with a lot of small and medium-sized charities who don't have the in-house support that and expertise that maybe Alice brings. And I think often we'll be working with them on a piece of strategic development or an impact evaluation. Realize how little is digitally kind of held or working effectively. And so when we're sort of thinking about the right project to start with, often it's looking at one that is actually achievable straight away. So often people want to go, you know, as Alice mentioned, for that big shiny thing, and that is probably really, really needed. But we also realize that it's going to take quite a lot to get them there. And perhaps actually their staff aren't ready, the workforce isn't ready, there are other critical pieces of infrastructure that need to be in place first. So trying to find something that's almost a quick win, for want of a better phrase, and kind of show people, to pinch Alice's phrase, what it means to work digitally, in a way that they feel, oh, do you know what, this might actually be transformative. And now it improves the buy-in that you get from you know, around the organization, because so often there'll be someone who's really excited and leading on this, and everyone else is being carried along for the ride, and we need to get everybody kind of singing from the same hymn sheet and really excited so that each part of the organization is kind of collaborating effectively. So often we try and start somewhere where it's affordable and realistic in terms of the time and that it's going to take, but also that it's going to still be really impactful, because we want people to get excited about the opportunities and use it as a springboard for the next thing. So yeah, I mean, everything you know, that Alice mentioned is so critical, but for us, certainly it's trying to find that route in, especially if it's an organization where they really haven't got started with us yet.
Yes, absolutely, Becky. And obviously you're working on several projects as part of your organization. And do you mind just giving us a couple of lines about what Charity Sparks do?
Yeah, sure. So we work with charities and nonprofits to help them really kind of move on with perhaps with their strategy or with their impact and evaluation. So sometimes, for example, we might be going in and what they've asked us to come and help with will be an impact framework. Now, we can build an impact framework, but if we don't have a way of managing the data and the insight and everything that kind of underpins that framework's going to fall over. So we then actually normally end up pulling CRM systems apart and data tracks and looking at the way that information is held, particularly when you're looking at, say, an impact project or an evaluation where there's a lot of qualitative and quantitative data coming through. So that's what I mean by it's a little bit like Pandora's box. We scratch the surface. That's falling out. So that's an example. So we're working with a couple of clients on impact frameworks at the moment, and looking also at how they then, all of the different components of their sort of strategy, how they're making the biggest change possible for the people they support or the organization. You know, it might be, as Alice is working, the wildlife and those areas, but how they make the biggest change as effectively as possible. you know, we want people to feel like engaged and enthused and refreshed by digital projects, so that they feel they've got more time to do the stuff that they really, really love, rather than feeling like this is another chore on their plate. So yeah, and the projects that we work on do tend to be quite broad, because often, you know, you pull one thread and you realize that the CRM doesn't exist. It's an Excel spreadsheet. So we kind of end up unpacking quite a lot of different things. And then pulling in expertise where we need that support ourselves as well. So yeah, a real variety, Lisa.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you, Becky, for providing that background about what you do, and also insisting on the fact that it needs to be SMART, you know, the SMART acronym, and specific and measurable. And obviously, Mark, you're also working with quite a lot of charities. Do they come to you having already perhaps picked a project, or do they come to you with the questions like how to pick the right one?
The starting point could be different for every charity. I mean, as Becky was saying, some charities, the first question is, what do I do? Where in others, it's more of a case of, you know, I have a list of projects, I have a list of objectives, I'm not too sure. You know, how to weave them all together as some kind of coherent change program, for example. So it could be either or, really. Typically, I think for that, we would tend to be engaged by a more senior person in the organization, we'd be looking across the organization. So we tend to, to endorse what Becky and Alice is saying, you know, there's the kind of value proposition of every project. So, and that can be thought of in, you know, the classic terms like, is it revenue generating? Is it going to help me fulfill my mission? Is it going to help the organization collaborate better together? And everything needs to be still rooted in that, you know, fundamental core reason of doing that. But then adjacent to that, we've got to have the capabilities, and organizations got to feel they can get the capabilities to actually get some of this stuff done. And in reality, it's a trade-off between all the things you want to do, all the things you can do, and cherry picking where kind of the match is strongest. You've got the strongest capabilities to the strongest value, if you like, and maybe picking those first. We also sometimes say when organizations are trying to say innovate or try something very new as well, try and focus on what I sometimes call the digital value proposition of the actual digital capability itself. So you hear a lot about, you know, all kinds of tech out there, as you said, Lisa, like blockchain and stuff like that. But the question to perhaps ask yourself is, does my ecosystem really need a shared ledger? You know, there's lots of ways you could use blockchain, but there's probably some smarter ways than others. And really understanding the absolute core purpose of, say, blockchain as a technology to support, say, your program delivery in the field, it's really important to ask yourselves and make sure that you are, you know, matching the right type of market solutions your real need and your ability to actually sustain that solution over time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mark, and thank you to all three of you. And like you said, is all about the core mission. How does the project link back and is actively helping the core mission to you know, to accelerate, to deliver better services, etc. But yeah, no, that's really interesting. And obviously, I know we've mentioned, you know, prioritizing and having a framework, so helping measure where we are and where we want to go. So what would you say are the very first steps charities should take? And also there's the people element. Obviously, Alice, you said you couldn't do it without, you know, all the federations and all the people. You know, this is only so good after, you know, to just say, oh, I think this is the right idea, but you need to get everybody to follow you along the way. So what should be the first steps in your opinion? And perhaps Becky, you want to start off with that one?
Sure, I can come on in. So I think for me, there'll be two things here. Is one, kind of making sure somebody is heading this up. So that might not be somebody from within the kind of internal IT team, if that's something you have. It might be somebody who is within a digital team, if That's what you have. But it might actually just be someone with some really good project management experience. It doesn't have to be someone with expertise, is what I would say. It's somebody who has got the networks across the organization and the ability to sort of take that helicopter view. We can bring expertise in, we can kind of find expertise from across the organization, but what you really need is somebody who's going to be able to knit it all together. The other thing, sort of as well as finding somebody who's going to lead the project, and that's not necessarily doing the work, it's just leading the project, is having a mapping phase. So I a little bit linked to that first discussion point, you know, what's the first project to take on is, if you've decided on the project, mapping it all out so it's really clear what you're trying to achieve, but also being really clear about what it's not going to do, because you know, you get such blurred lines, and we sort of talk about things being in scope and out of scope, and you know, actually being really clear about what those, you know, what's included in this project and what needs to be done to see it being successful is going to be really important. And that really helps everybody have that kind of laser clear view on what it is they're setting out to achieve. And, you know, and without that, it just does tend to get a bit messy, and lots of really good ideas get scooped in around the edges, which isn't helpful to the person who's project managing it. You know, and I think that it's important to know that it's okay to ask for help. So as much as it doesn't need to be just on the shoulders of one person, it's also sort of looking at, you know, either developing a little team around that person, particularly if that can involve lots of different parts of the organization. So that improves buy-in, it improves that kind of co-working aspect, but also sometimes saying, actually, we don't have this expertise in-house. Who do we need to advise on that piece of software, or, you know, what the right solution is? So just kind of being really mindful of the capacity your team actually has, the expertise that's in-house, and then really what it looks like to be successful before you've even taken the first step in the doing.
No, definitely, Vicky. That's really interesting. And perhaps Alice, you product manage quite a few ones. I guess what would you say if a charity was asking you, you know, what foundation should I put in place? And
yeah, well, I mean, this is, you won't be surprised to hear a discussion that we had around what foundations need to be in place, and it was interesting just. Quickly, the discussion around kind of innovation, because I work for a federation, what's really, really helpful to me is that it's a great recipe for innovation. I've got 47 different organizations doing really interesting things, but we have a shared strategy, which means the scalable things from across the federation as well. So part of my role is finding where something's already working and seeing how we can then scale that to other things. So I just want to kind of not lose that as well. And that's where we can learn from other charities and other organizations like the ones on this call about what other things that have worked. But we actually did spend a bit of time working out the foundations we needed to have in place in order to actually deliver on digital transformation for the Federation. And we co-worked it up. I have advisory groups and delivery groups across the Federation. And we take a good look at kind of what does people need. And we came up with a few things, which one of which was we need to increase our culture and confidence and our skills across the Federation. We needed to make sure we had the right infrastructure and that it was fit for purpose for what we needed. We needed to make sure that it was secure and compliant. We need to make sure that we had insights and analysis from data informing what decisions we were making. And we needed to make sure that accessibility and inclusion was included. And I say this as like, this is the foundation of our own digital maturity matrix of like, what is valuable to us? These are the things that we have said we want in our digital projects. And that means they all have to include this. And then we work up through our kind of maturity matrix to wherever we want to get to, really. So the fact, which is a slightly different answer to that question, because I'm aware, but we thought about it from the perspective of kind of what do we need to put in place for everyone to come on that journey? There's no point just working with those who are already doing really well. But conversely, there's no point just working with those who are already like really struggling. We need both of those to work together in our federation so that those who are doing really well can support and scale to those others. So it's probably a slightly different setup, but that's basically what we've done in order to work out what the foundations need to be to get things moving, because we want to be able to continually be able to respond to these opportunities and risks. Because I'm always really conscious that whilst we're talking about projects, it's like spoilers, it's not going to be done. We're not going to get to the end and be like, brilliant, digitally transformed, nailed it. Like, unfortunately, we need to make sure we're putting in place the stuff that allows us to respond in future as well. And that is slightly different. So how does each project then build on that and develop those foundations?
Absolutely, Alice. Thank you. And thank you for bringing your real life also experience and having to deal with different, I guess, different goals. Did you find that each of the federation had slightly different goals, perhaps as part of the bigger vision?
Yeah, so we have a shared strategy. I realise this is a podcast. I have it under my desk. It's our shared strategy, so I can always remember what it is. We have three goals, five transformations and five enabling priorities. And one of the transformations is digital transformation. So that's where my role comes in. So we all have a shared co-created, obviously, strategy, but each trust has its own individual strategy. So yes, they are based in their own context. So for some, for example, marine is going to be incredibly important. If you're a landlocked trust, that's much less likely to be something that's going to, you know, hit your buttons if we focus on a marine type of project. So because we have different landscapes, different contexts, and we work across the UK, so Scotland, Wales, England, and the Crown dependencies all have different governments. We'll be dealing with the different contexts there. So yes, in a very long-winded answer to a short question, yes, it's very different in different ones. But having that collective framework gives us something to hang it off.
Yeah. And to be held accountable to as well, because everybody, like you were saying, Becky, singing from the same hymn sheet with slight variations kind of thing. Very, very interesting. And Mark, in your conversations, do you see loads of charities asking for specific planning tools or specific goal setting strategies that you recommend, or is it very much one solution per case?
We probably think about this kind of almost like two levels of like planning and getting ready. One is the organisational wide level. Okay, so that maybe echoes some of the points already made. There needs to be the right leadership. There needs to be a sort of sustainable appetite for change and ideally funding that's going to carry you through. And the kind of willingness to, you know, evolve the organisation over time, because it's not a journey that a definite endpoint, as people have said. So at an organisational level, things need to be got ready, if you like. And that could also be including things like making sure that there's sufficient collaboration between teams and within the organisation to move forward with some of the more complex, you know, cross-cutting projects. So, for example, one of the things we sometimes consult and adapt to is the need for like a 360 support or beneficiary view or something. And, you know, that almost takes every part of the organisation to work together to realise that. So at the top level of the organisation, there's some readiness activities that need to be done. But then beneath that, you might have a number of initiatives or projects. And again, that's about, you know, bringing the right skills in, as Becky said, getting outside skills if you need, make sure you've got the time, finding those people with personal energy and that kind of vision, you know, that's going to drive it forward. And that kind of combination of all these change actors within your organisation and an environment they can be successful in is something towards where you need to get to make sure that your transformation can sustain. I think it really is ultimately you're slowly rebuilding your organisation over time is how I think about it. It really isn't about a project. You're not sort of, you know, getting a door fitted or something. It's
a slow burn, you know. And I think and actually that leads quite nicely to my third question, which is the best way to avoid overwhelming, because people think that perhaps they need to make progress quickly on several initiatives in order to perhaps demonstrate to a funder or the board that they are, you know, accelerating, doing loads of things, but it can be a lot, very overwhelming, especially if, you know, you can't lose people along the way and you really need to keep the momentum across all teams. So, you know, how do you think they can make progress without rushing to do it all at once? Perhaps that's one for you, Alice, having to deal with, you know, so many different stakeholders.
Yeah, I realised the answer that came into my head might not be the one you're expecting here. So I will just
give it anyway. Yes.
So I'll tell you what I do. So basically, the phrase, I have a very unhelpful job title. So I'm going to turn up and I've got two words in my job title that people are not going to like. One of them is digital. The other one is transformation. So, yay. I'm turning up and people are already worried. People have an emotional response to the idea of digital. I'm sure we've all spotted this, where people, you know, it's made them feel stupid in the past. They feel they're not keeping up with it. They are prepared for me to turn up and tell them I'm going to change everything and they're going to be automated out of the bits they love about their jobs and all that stuff that we've heard. I'm aware of this when I turn up. So I tend to go the other way. So some of what I do with Wildlife Trust when I first go there is I have a massive bag of Lego right next to me and I do Lego serious play workshops about their feelings about digital. And so we get out the Lego. I am a qualified Lego serious play facilitator. Don't worry, I'm not just doing this rogue. But I will take it with me and we will literally do a totally offline discussion where I get to know them, get to know what's going on, really get to the roots of, I have kind of a couple of workshops I do about really trying to find out, you know, what's not working? Where are you now? How do, you know, what's your vision? How does it link to your strategy? Where are you trying to get to? Where's the gap? There is usually an obvious project that is in that gap and it might be moving to cloud because actually you've got loads of servers sat in your office. It might be that you need some kind of new mapping software. It might be that the CRM needs linking to something to do with how we do campaigning, for example. So it's pulling out those projects from there really, really supports that. But I would say the kind of my approach tends to be moving away from the kind of discussion about it being digital. I mean, we've mentioned this before, but it's like, you know, digital is helping people do the things that matter to them. It's quite unusual that anyone works for a wildlife trust because they love being inside in front of a computer. So I have to work with that. You know, these, I want to get, as has been kind of mentioned, get people outside doing the things they're really good at. They add value because they're working in a local place, not because they're sat in front of a computer trying to get a CRM to work, for example. So I don't know if that quite answers your question, but it was the one that came to mind in terms of how I kind of start that process and start to work with trusts.
Yes, that's really helpful because, yes, people feel overwhelmed because the actual term digital transformation feels overwhelming and scary and you don't know where to start because so many things are being thrown at that term. So yes, it was a very, very good answer, Alice. And I love your Lego, your Lego approach. And Becky, I guess you're also seeing perhaps from different level of leadership that same overwhelming feeling perhaps at the onset.
Yeah, I completely agree with Alice that people tend to have an emotional reaction to digital projects, digital transformation, anything that they think is a little bit new, scary or change. And I always have two questions that I ask people. So we'll try and do as many kind of co-created workshops as possible. So very, I'm loving Alice's Lego. That might need to go on my training request for the next year. you know, when we kind of sit there and I often come laden with post-it notes and biscuits, that tends to be my tools of choice. But again, keeping it offline where we can and like really engaged and personal. The two questions that I tend to ask people at the end of these workshops when we're sort of talking about what's next is that people tend to have two responses. It might be yes, but. So that is their kind of, all right, I get it. I understand we need to go in this direction. But here are all the kind of like hesitations and worries I've got. Sometimes that's things like someone's promised me this before and it didn't happen, or it's created me more work, not less, or, you know, I've got this system that was implemented last year and I still don't have an active login for it. You know, there's all these kind of things that they might have experienced previously, which has put their guards up to anything new. And I get them to scribble all of these down. So we capture all of the yes, but moments. The other response people have, or the other kind of question I say is, what's your yes and? So that's when someone is super excited and actually can't wait to get started. They're like, yeah, and we could do this. Or, and have you thought about, or even, and could it solve this problem? And so people are really excited and they want to capture all the things that it might also, they might also volunteer information about other little pain points or other things that they're really excited about. And we capture us all down because then we know the language that they're speaking and we know the kind of real personal emotions around it. And we can talk back to each one of those when we're thinking about disseminating new training or giving stakeholder communication. So, you know, we're kind of then able to reflect back to them the language they've been using and answer it, sometimes as bluntly as in like an FAQ, but sometimes a little bit more subtly, just, you know, kind of like removing those fears and those worries. So those kind of the yes but and the yes and moments for me are really important. And also just recognizing the difference in language and engagement styles that so many people have. So if you're working with a lot of volunteers, you are going to have a different kind of huge range of experiences and professional knowledges and time they have available to give to you training. So you might need to take a very different approach with a group of volunteers than you would with staff who have already gone through one project with you, you know, who are already feeling a little bit kind of worked up and ready and warmed up. So, yeah, just thinking about the way you disseminate the communication, the training, the types of documents. Are people accessing it from home, from work laptops, from personal laptops, all that kind of thing? Just so that you try and be inclusive as possible, whilst also, you know, sort of just showing people that they're being heard and not just steamrolled.
That's really interesting. Again, getting people's buy-in and adapting your communications and the way you share about the vision and the progress with every individual, you make it digestible. and Mark, do you as part of your work, do you deal with different types of stakeholders or perhaps just the senior leadership team and help them communicate?
So we advise on tactics organisations can have and sort of facilitate change, if you like. So I totally again endorse. It's very important. You know, the psychological response to change that people have should be recognised and I say that each team, the organisation, you're in control of this change. The robots are not coming in and changing it as they want. You know, it's your change. And I also generally believe that a lot of change really just does take the mundane and the routine out of people's lives and enables them to, you know, be more creative and achieve other things. So, but I'd also answer the question a different way, because one of the things I find often when I'm engaging with the charity is before we even start talking about digital transformation, there's already too much going on anyway. Mm. Like most charities completely suffer, or third sector organisations, from, I would say, this desire to try and do too much with too little. And so I would also emphasise there is a key role at that leadership level to make sure that no one's being asked to spin more than 25 plates, because it gets to a point where it starts to become unreasonable. So, and sometimes that can mean, creating a plan forward for each team and organisation as a whole that is achievable, and that may mean sacrificing some other objectives to do this. Ultimately, an organisation only has so much resource, and therefore we have to prioritise in some process or another, and someone has to do that. So I'd also emphasise giving time back to people is another key way you can help the both ones as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, sometimes, like you said, it comes on top, but we know that it will, the transformation project will help alleviate what's already on, on the plate ultimately. But I think it's about juggling these priorities. It's really, really, really interesting. If any of you had perhaps a small charity leader in front of you and that is about to embark on the digital transformation project, what is the one thing you would advise them? I don't know, Becky, you want to start being a small charity as many of them will listen to us today.
Going first is always tricky. I think that sort of summarizing, I think from what we've all been saying is that you have to not walk before you can run. So there are so many things you can do, and it's probably more than a 5-year plan of digital transformation projects that you might want to implement. But that's the first step of thinking, what is going to make a difference this year, and picking something that's achievable. As Alice mentioned earlier, digital transformation isn't something where we get to the end of the 5-year strategy and go, oh, we're now transformed, because we all know how fast things are moving in the digital world, and there'll be something new by the end of year 2. So just sort of being flexible and just being really mindful of what it is you start off on so that you keep moving forwards and you don't end up throwing it all in because it was a bit too tricky to start with.
Absolutely. Thank you, Becky. What about you, Mark? I know you're mainly talking with large charities, but on the small charity context, there's
Do advise smaller charities. Yeah, I mean, I would say if you really just ultimately, you know, you're there to achieve your mission. So you've got to feel, is this really going to help this organisation achieve its mission better in 5 years' time? And if you answer that, if you're sure within your heart that that is yes, then I say work out a way to do it. Because probably doing nothing will slowly mean the organisation will get more and less relevant to today's digital world over time. So work out how you can get it done.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good one. And Alice?
Well, I am enjoying the free advice that I am getting through this. So thank you both. Excellent. But also, so I would say, I mean, we had Tom Steinberg come and talk to us, who was he's a kind of digital specialist. And his advice was to our charity chief execs, if you were starting your charity today, what would you be doing and what would you build first? And he was like, that's the thing you might want to take a look at. And that's quite a big one to throw at chief exec. That's not like an easy start, but I think it's worth thinking about just in terms of, you know, are we starting, I'm about to use a terrible metaphor for a wildlife trust. Are we starting from a greenfield site or a brownfield site in terms of our like aspirations? I've always found that really helpful of like, okay, let's think big, but at the same time, okay, so if we were starting now, we would have a really great CRM system, or we would share more of our systems with other wildlife trusts, for example. That might be something people start to think about. And then you go, okay, so how do we start to kind of work through that? And I would also say to them, don't use the phrase digital transformation. Tell people what you're doing. Like, have it as like, you know, we want to give you time back. We want to be more efficient. We want to be more effective. We want to deliver our services better. That would definitely be my advice. Don't go in calling it that, because it will, as we've discussed, it will put people off. Find a better way. Tell them the benefit of it as the thing that you're doing, not calling it digital transformation.
The impact of it. So take it, Alice, do you want to change job title?
No, I think it's fine. I do think it's fine, but I also think it's a point. I mean, it's, you know, it's a known thing. Some people find it great. Like you're saying, there is two different approaches. Some people are like, brilliant, digital transformation. Have I got some stuff for you? And I'm like, great, this is really good. There are definitely different approaches to it. I think it's valuable because it makes sense to peers. So I can have conversations like this and I can talk to other people in other charities who have the same job title, but I am aware it's not the easiest one to have if you're not a fan of digital or change.
Absolutely. But yeah, well, brilliant. Well, thank you very much to the three of you. Those have been very interesting conversations and loads of great takeaways for our listeners. Yeah, I do hope that you also, you know, liked each other's interaction and learn perhaps from each other. I take it the Lego has got has made an impact. But yeah, no, that's all we're gonna have time for today. But thank you very much, Alice, Becky, and Mark, for your time.
Thank you, Lisa. Great to chat.
Lovely to chat. And thank you to everybody for listening. We hope that, yeah, you found that conversation helpful. We'll put more resources on our webpage and on our website so that you can delve a little bit more detail around what digital transformation can mean for your organization. And if you tune in next time, we will talk about the state of climate action in the UK charity sector, as we did very recently a study, and we've released the survey insights. So definitely want to check out in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, thank you very much and have a good rest of the week.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.